Hello, everybody. This is Robert Lloyd, and this is the new show, Rockin' the Music World with Robert Lloyd. And I'm a host now on the White Network, and so proud to be part of them. Some of you might know who I am. I'm a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, past member of the League of the South. I'm no longer a member of the League, but probably the League of the South is where I'm at home most easily. If any of you know about those organizations, I was raised in the Midwest, but I've lived now in South Florida for many years now, and I almost consider myself a cracker. And I'm a lifelong musician. A songwriter since the time I learned my first few chords on a guitar, and started writing music right away, probably sometime in, probably, I don't know, 7th, 8th, or 9th grade, somewhere around there, probably maybe 8th grade I started, when I finally got $25 from a paper route, went and bought my friend's guitar. He couldn't play his guitar, so I bought his guitar from him for $25 and got home and tuned up my guitar and learned about 3 or 4 chords and wrote a song. And I've never stopped writing since then. I've been a professional songwriter. I take that back. I've been a professional musician. But my songwriting, I have a few songs with a few publishers that have taken my music, but I haven't had a hit song or anything. The publishing business is tough like every other business. They can get great songs, but can they get them to the right artist that's making the hits at the time? There's a lot of things that go on with that, but as you know, as you will know, that I'm very attuned to the music business, and I try to keep up on what's going on, but there's only certain things I like. I love beautiful music, melodies, I like all types of music. I don't care what type of music it is, except for a few things that, your hard metal / metal music. That's not music. That's just, I call it like World Wrestling Federation screaming, and that's juvenile, and we're not having that on this show. I mean, you can go to record labels that have that, you don't need me. You can go to a lot of music sites that want to talk about stuff. That's where that's at. This is for we're not talking rap. We're not getting into stuff like that. Rap's not even music. I mean, rap is it might be an art form. I don't know, but it doesn't have melody or anything, and so. It's a bad art form. If it is even an art form, it's tribalism, and it's not my tribe. I'm of German ancestry, and I love the great classical works, the great modern, great songs with great melodies, and there's plenty coming out all the time. I'm a Christian also. I love what's the Christian movement has done in the last 20 years with the contemporary Christian music. If I hear Amazing Grace one more time, I'm going to have a word with God about it. We don't need to live in the past like that and have that in church, and anything, if it's not that, then it's the devil's music. It just makes me ill to my stomach. I mean, it makes me nauseous. My home church, I don't go to it anymore. I go to a contemporary service, but my old church, where a lot of my friends are, they're just an old-fashioned, they're an old mid-sized Baptist church with everybody's got gray hair there. I mean, I've got grayish silver hair, white hair myself. But they're old, old people. Even the kids that are forced to go there are either old, old people, or they're just forced there and they're miserable by their parents and grandparents to be there. No young people want to be in that church. And they look down at young people and the contemporary music, Christian music, as the devil's music. And, you know, I told my good friend Pastor Bill, I says, you know, Bill, I can't write a song 200 years old. I can only be now, to say that it's 2012 right now. I can't write a song 200 years ago. I can only write a song right now. And, you know, and just because a song's 150 years old doesn't mean that's Christian music. And something I write about the Lord is not Christian music. You know, and I don't want to hear that. And he says, well, you know, he would explain why that's Christian, that's godly music, and the modern business is not. I'm sorry, there's some great composers, songwriters, lyricists in the modern world, especially in the Christian movement. Like another 20 years ago didn't even exist, folks. If you don't think this is important, you think 20 years ago it virtually did not exist. Anyway, I told my pastor friend, I says, well, look, you have a brand new van out there. Well, that new Ford van, that's not in the Bible. If you say the drums aren't in the Bible, which drums are in the Bible, but if you say drums aren't in the Bible, so we can't have drums in our music, and I know some great Christian drummers, my word, I'm so proud to even to be in the same world with these talented some of these talented people. But then you have to go in and you have to go into a covered wagon with wooden wheels and everything, and that's how you're going to come to work, because they didn't have brand new Ford vans in the Bible. So if that's what we're talking, if that's how we're going to justify our existence, then okay, let's do it. Don't come here to church in your new van. I don't want to hear it. But eventually I had to move on. There was a contemporary service that I had to drive by every time I was going to my old church, and it said contemporary service, 11 o'clock Sundays. So I played hooky one day. I told them I wasn't coming. I might not have said why, but I ran the sound there, so I mean you just could not show up. And I visited the contemporary service, and this was some years ago, and I was just amazed at what I saw. And they had all age groups there, but people were there because they wanted to be there, not because some old FART said only this is Christian music, and you're not Christian music if you like this type of music. Well, it got me into the Christian contemporary music side of things, and I'm so glad I love it to this day. I appreciate the old people with young hearts that minister to the young and promote these contemporary services. Remember, you don't want to have a kids' church. You have to have a mix. But you don't want the old people in there looking at everybody saying, you're going to the devil if you don't play Amazing Grace. You know, I'm sorry. Those people need to get out of that service and get over to their own traditional service, if that's what we want to call it. I don't even think we need to call it that. We need to call it old-fashioned service, because the traditional service is now becoming the contemporary music Christian scene service. And so actually, I think we're becoming the traditional service now. We're the ones that are growing. The other churches are dying out. 9 out of 10 churches in America are dying. They're getting less and less people. But 1 out of 10 is growing. And I'll tell you which ones those are. Those are the contemporary services. Those are the unbelievable envelopment of our young people into church again, that where they were running from it, now they're running to it. They can't wait to go to these churches. I go to a church on a Saturday night because we don't have any room on Sunday mornings. We have 3 services on Sunday morning. We have 2 on Saturday night. I even wrote a song about Jesus is coming here on Saturday night. I love the song. I wrote it several months ago because this church does so many good things, and we can't wait to go at 6:30, our service on Saturday night. And my gosh, it's a rocking of people up and singing to the Lord and giving praise. And then after we're done, it's about an hour, 10-minute service, something like that. We don't drag the services on. It's just dumb to have these 2-hour services. And anyway, we're done with this. And then a lot of the Christians, we always find somewhere to go eat as a group. And the fellowship is good, clean Christian fellowship. It's just wonderful. But that's so you're learning a little bit about me, and I this was not what the show's about today. In fact, I'm going to be talking about the composer Beethoven today to start the series off today, and I don't want to bore anybody, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about myself. I've been in the Southern movement for years. I'm kind of instead of a rabble rouser, I guess I'm a rebel rouser. And I'm what you might call an enemy of the state. This country, I'm like John Wayne, for instance. John Wayne wanted to leave the country in the mid to late 60s. He was so disgusted on what the country was becoming. And I'll tell you right now, I didn't leave this country, but this country left me. And, I'm an American waiting for Dixie to rise again. That's how I look at it. And I say Dixie because the South was right. If you really want to know what people were fighting for, they were the Christians that were fighting the heathens of the North. They didn't invade anybody. The federal government decided to go kill Southerners because we wanted a divorce. I mean, can you imagine? If your wife sues you for divorce, well, if she's going to sue me for divorce, I'm going to have to kill her. Well, that's the same way that we could say with the North didn't want the South starting their own country and leaving the federal government. So they'll just come down here and kill us. And that's just ridiculous. I'm getting off base here. But anyway, I've done a lot of things, written a lot of music, promoted different things. I love organizing things, and when Tan Stoffel talked about he was looking for other shows for the White Network, I really hadn't thought about it. I used to do a lot of work with Dixie Broadcasting Radio. A lot of you might have listened to Dixie Broadcasting Radio. Ray McBerry's the president of that. He's the guy that ran for governor recently on the Georgia First ticket. And did very well. He owns Dixie Broadcasting Radio, and my music has played pretty prominently on that. It has since its founding a long time ago. I suppose Ray's been on the air now 7-8 years, and he's always played my music, and I'm very proud of that. I've won awards through that show, and I used to do the commentary on the news with Confederate Mouse, and we used to have a lot of fun. Every day we had comments on things that happened in the world. And then after I would read the article on what happened, the news article, we'd have this little Confederate Mouse character come up and give his opinion on what he thought of that. And it was so much fun. A lot of fun. Confederate Mouse was a hilarious little guy, very big ego. And that's some of my background and stuff, and enough of that. Well, I'm almost in the 15 minutes of the show, and I haven't even started really what I'm going to be talking about. Oh, we're going to be talking about different things on this show, always music, and I love all types of music, But I did think that it would be fitting to start the new show out, the new show on the White Network, about the life and times of Ludwig van Beethoven. Not Von, it's Van, it's Dutch ancestry name. He was a German composer, but he had ancestry going back into the Netherlands, and he used V-A-N. And sometimes people were concerned with that because V-O-N in German is royalty. And that's very important. At that time, several hundred years ago, that your status in life was set based on who your mom and dad were. And, you know, as Americans, we don't necessarily... We don't respect that at all. We have the Rockefellers and the Kennedy clan and stuff like that. But I don't care. The Kennedy clan are murderers and drug dealers and stuff. I mean, I don't care about them at all. And just because somebody's born rich, I could care less. Who's the person? Who is the person? What did they... In fact, I grew up, and one time in America, we grew up thinking that if a person came from nowhere, just nowhere, and picked themselves off the ground and became a success, that was the true American spirit. And we're losing that. Now everybody's a victim, right? But anyway, we're going to go back to a non-royal person, Ludwig van Beethoven. And I think I can probably safely say this. He is the most famous, admired, outside of me, the most talented composer of all time in all of history, at least the ones that did become famous. I personally very much admire the man. His Moonlight Sonata is some of the most beautiful music ever written. It's amazing to me that this man walked the earth, to tell you the truth. He was born in Bonn, Germany. He lived from 1770 and died in 1827 at the age of 56. So that gives you an idea. At 56 years old at that time, that's about how long people lived. I mean, they didn't live to be 95 years old back then. You know, there wasn't that much of medicine that could help. He was taught the piano by his father, who wasn't a great musician, but his father taught him piano, and eventually, once Beethoven reached a certain stage, his father had to have other people that could teach him to play. And he also was a great violinist, too. A lot of people don't realize this. He played violin and viola, and it's hilarious. During his lifetime, when he would deal with the orchestras, some of his stuff was so difficult to play, and he was such a great musician. He could just play anything. But these violinists would complain that this is much too difficult for us to do. And he'd pick up the violin, and he'd play the thing for them. And here's this great pianist picking up their violin. And he would play the violin part so they'd know it wasn't too difficult. I can do it, and I'm not even a violinist. Well, he was a violinist. But... he was a fighter. He was cantankerous, irascible is one of the words they use. I'll repeat that later on here. And not a tall man. And they say he was very, he was a stocky, muscular man, a well-built man, they said. And, of course, he was a handsome man, as we see in all his paintings and drawings of him, you know, from the bust. Drawings are famous of Beethoven, his waving hair and stuff, and the character that he had. He would fire his friends every day and apologize to them the next day. He would keep friends for a lifetime, but he was a hard guy to be friends with. At the same time, he would ask for forgiveness for blowing his top at something. You know, I don't know who that sounds like. I'm glad I'm not that way. Anyway, he started writing around 13 years old. He had a tutor, and his tutor actually was showing him how to write music. And that's kind of interesting. When I started writing music, I got my $25 guitar, went in my bedroom, tuned it, and learned my first four chords real quick, and boom, there I go. I was playing a ukulele a little before that. My mother had a ukulele, so I would steal that and play that. And if those know the ukulele, it's only four strings, but the hand formation is the same. So I was learning the ukulele, playing that and playing songs on it. And my friends in the neighborhood Their mom and dad bought them guitars, and they couldn't play it. So I was teaching them the guitar from the ukulele, and eventually I had a paper out, and I went and got myself a guitar. So I was so happy about that. But anyway, getting back to Beethoven again, he had a tutor, and he was taught how to write music, or at least shown how this guy writes music. I don't know if Beethoven thought to himself, I don't know about that. Here's how I would do it. But he started writing around 13 years old. And somebody in his life was a writer. Anyway, the first 22 years he lived in Bonn, and he became somewhat of a prodigy in people's eyes. His dad thought he was more of a prodigy than other people did. But eventually, people that admired his talent financed him to an extent, you know, gave him money that he could live on and stuff, and that allowed him to travel to Vienna in 1787 at the age of 17. And the idea was him to go meet Mozart. And some people claim he met Mozart, and other people say he never did. He was there 2 weeks, and they even have quotes somewhat. People say Mozart was quoting as saying, keep an eye on that guy. You know, he's going to be a great one of these days. Now, I don't believe, of course, I don't know. I mean, that sounds like something somebody wanted to say to make history sound nice. I don't think he ever met Mozart, but maybe he did. But anyway, after 2 weeks, he got a message that, I was going to say a phone call, he got a message that his mother was ill. So he went back to Bonn, Germany, and shortly thereafter, his mother died. His father, who he had kind of a strained relationship with, his father was very strict at times, and there's stories about his father teaching him piano and how abusive he was, to use the modern term. Maybe he was strict, but a lot of people say that was a bunch of hogwash, that he really was not that bad to his son and didn't beat him if he didn't play things right or anything. But his dad was a drinker, and when his wife died, Beethoven's mother died, he went to deep depression, I guess, and the alcoholism got out of hand. Ludwig then had to care for his two younger brothers. He's 17 years old. He had two younger brothers. For the next 5 years, he took care of his brothers while they were growing up. He even had to go to court and to get half of his father's salary, which is I don't know what type of salary his father got, but they paid it directly to him so Beethoven could support his two brothers and their family, because his father had become very irresponsible. So anyway, around this time, Beethoven was playing the viola in the local count orchestra. And that helped with the finances also. So he was a good enough musician. He could even pick up the viola that, of course, he trained on to an extent. And he could play that in an orchestra and get paid. So it's kind of interesting how he supported himself. And it was not easy for a musician to support himself at that time. We didn't have amplifiers at that time. And, you know, concert halls they had theaters, of course. But they didn't have, like, every bar had a place. But, you know... But they did play in bars and stuff. But through a friend, he met Count Ferdinand von Waldstein, and it became a lifelong friend. And more importantly, or just as importantly, he was a financial supporter of Beethoven's throughout his life. Now remember, at that time, you were just trying to survive. I mean, there wasn't welfare and stuff like that, and unemployment benefits and Social Security. You had to work. Most people worked the farms and you know, physical labor, obviously. There wasn't computers. I mean, so you didn't have computer support people. And yeah. So anyway, this financial support was huge and very, very rare, especially for a young person. And so this was very important to him. In 1790, Beethoven met composer Joseph Haydn, and he studied under Haydn for several years. Then in 1792, 5 years after his mother's death, I believe is 5 years, Beethoven moved to Vienna. where he would live for the rest of his life. And initially, when he moved there, Beethoven devoted himself to performing and studying the piano and violin under the direction of Haydn. And during this time, the Viennese royalty recognized Beethoven's talent, and a number of them also contributed financially to Beethoven. During this time, Beethoven's father died, and so he now didn't have any parents, and it is the way it goes in this world. Of course, remember, we're talking 1790 period, 1790s, 92, and this is early in Beethoven's career. He moved there as a 22 into Vienna, and now this is considered his earliest three periods of his writing lifetime. And one is this early period up until about 1798 to 1800. And when he went to Vienna, he was starting to do a lot of public performances around 1795. He was getting his compositions, he was still writing, and he was getting published around this time also. And so he a lot of the public performances he would do, a lot of times were for royalty at their private parties. And this is how the royalty kind of controlled the art world at that time, because they're the only ones that had money. And so you had to be very careful on how you wrote. If they didn't like your music, you'd be out on the street. But Beethoven wasn't one to suffer fools. I mean, he was very upfront about his positions on things. But he didn't like these royal parties where they would snap their fingers and say, "Play Beethoven," or whoever musician was there, and then they had to play. Anyway, 1800. Now, let's move along here. If anything, I want to be entertaining. I don't want to be boring to people. You know, I get so bored so quickly with things, so I don't want you to get bored when you're listening to me. So anyway, 1800, he was composing and dedicating his works to royalty, and that helped finance him. So, you know, he didn't want to suffer fools, but he has a history of dedicating works to the, you know, Napoleon and Wellington and counts and girls. He was the ultimate loser in love in life. He never got married, and he had always fallen in love with somebody else's wife, and these things didn't work out too well. But you know, he would dedicate things. Finally, what separated Beethoven from his influential peers such as Haydn and Mozart and people like that, and this is so important, were his melodies. Beethoven's work were melodic. There's nothing more beautiful than the Moonlight Sonata. And, you know, Mozart never wrote anything like that. You know, people talk about how great Mozart is. I'm sorry. Don't put him in the same breath with Beethoven. You can put Tchaikovsky in there with Beethoven, Johann Strauss Jr., Pachelbel's Canon in D major. But, I mean, there's a few and far between. But, you know, it's his melodies were so beautiful or so powerful at times. And Beethoven was a romantic. And like I said, he had fallen in love with women that wouldn't marry him, as they were royalty. And Beethoven hated the class system and stuff, and he didn't respect that, and nor do I. This was a time period where there was royalty and non-royalty, and thus they would remain separate. You didn't marry out of your class. He wrote, Beethoven wrote the Moonlight Sonata in 1801, and dedicated it to a female student, a countess. And it wasn't called the Moonlight Sonata at that time. After he died, it was called the Moonlight Sonata by some critic, and the public started referring to it that. It was the Symphony No. 2 or 3, whatever it was. And it was written in 1801 one of his early ones, and it was beautiful. So Beethoven at that time would have been about 31 years old. Now, remember, in our modern culture from the 60s on, anybody over 30 can't be trusted. They're old people, right? Only the young 18 to 25-year-olds are creative. Once you hit 30, you're washed up. That is hogwash, folks. That's one reason I'm doing this show, because of the lies that are going on in this world right now. I just recently turned 60 years old, and I'm writing the best I've ever written. And I don't have a lot of things to write at times right now. That's one of the things, motivation, because we're pretty much shut out of the music business at times. But don't think that the older you get, the less proficient you are in your craft. And I'm at the best I've ever been right now. And Beethoven at 31, he was just warming up. His greatest compositions, outside of a few like this, were attributed to the last 10 years of his life. So, and he was mostly deaf at the time, or way along the road to being deaf. So anyway, we're up to the 1801 in that Moonlight Sonata time. And with that, I'm going to let everybody sit back. I'm gonna play about a 6-minute piece. It is easily one of the most beautiful 6 minutes in the whole world. And I'm going to play that for you, then we'll be back. I'm going to let the whole thing play out. I'm not going to do that very often. I'm going to do it now, though. Enjoy the Moonlight Sonata. Was that beautiful or what? That is so powerful. The Moonlight Sonata. That's power. And that's just so beautiful. And the music critic stated that it was like moonlight shining on Lake Lucerne. And Lake Lucerne is in Switzerland. And I guess it's a very beautiful place. Some people don't think that the moonlight properly reflects the mood of the song. And I would certainly disagree with the critics. Some people think it's somber and stuff. But I think they're the same people that would like thrash metal and think that's cool. You know, if they don't understand this music, this isn't a show for you. I know there's people out there listening to this right now that understand exactly what I'm saying. And they don't have a lot of people, they don't have a lot of people they can talk about it like this show was going to talk about it. But I know there's a certain segment of our population and very much in our ancestry, and I have German ancestry, and I'm very proud. My family goes back into Hessen, Germany, and I can find it, my ancestry, all about 1653, I can trace it all the way back there. I'm very proud of that, and this is the music of my people. And I hope someday if my music is ever discovered, like a lot of the writers that are listening in right now, the musicians that are listening in, some people aren't musicians that just love music, but especially the writers that are listening to the show, if we would die, I would hope that I would go down as another in the line of the beautifully talented German composers, because that's what I would want to be known as. By the way, Beethoven once told a friend that after all the accolades and the commotions that he had gotten for the public exposure to Moonlight Sonata, here is what he said to a friend, quote, "Surely I've written better things," end quote. Now, is that funny or what? You know, now he's going to be coming up here with Beethoven's Ninth and Beethoven's Fifth. His Beethoven's Ninth was written right before he died, within a couple of years of his death. And that's considered, some people think that's the most beautiful song ever written. So, surely I've written better things. Oh, wow. In Vienna, Beethoven made many friends, as he was popular for his music. But he was a tough person at times to be friends with. People would excuse his angry moods because of his talent. And that's fine and dandy. But, you know, I take everybody as a person, even Beethoven, my best friends, people walking down the street. I don't care where you come from. I'll try not to give you a pass on something just because you're famous. And in this world, we do that all the time. And so anyway, around this time, he also told friends he felt like he was going deaf, early 30s, and he was going deaf. He was bitter about this. He felt it was, quote, unfair, unquote. That being a musician, and he was going deaf. Beethoven was a Christian. In the studies I have on his works, I don't have a lot of information about his Christian faith and how solid it was and everything. But I remember at one time in my life I considered myself an atheist. Now figure that out. But when I got out of the music business, I was so bitter that I wasn't successful in my music to where I should be an international star. Musicians are egotistical, so bear with me on this. But I told God, how dare you give me this talent, and then I'm going to have to suffer with it the rest of my life in failure. And of course, that's rather comical because looking back on it now, if I was an atheist, if I truly thought there was no God, why was I blaming him? I mean, if there's no God, there's no one to blame but myself. So that's in another time I'll talk about that and my ups and downs in my life and what an idiot I can be at times. I hope you can all identify with that because, you know, really, gosh, we can all be idiots in our times and we have to be forgiving for that reason, knowing that we're just as bad, if not worse at times than some people. Anyway, he Beethoven, with his deafness and his depression over that, he sometimes didn't even want to live through the embarrassment. He didn't want to have to, one time he didn't go anywhere for like 2 years. And he finally confided in a friend he could not face the embarrassment of looking at people in society that, you know, he was famous and telling them that he was deaf. It embarrassed him. And he thought of committing suicide over this. I don't know how serious he was on this, but he did contemplate suicide. Now in 1809, now we're getting into his middle period of his life, his composition life. And at that time, he was getting a little tired of Vienna. And so his royal friends decided to give him a bump in the allowance that he was to live on with a certain financial constraints. He couldn't leave Vienna. I mean, he could go travel and play places, but he couldn't move away from Vienna. They could not accept the world's greatest composer. At that time, he was already well known and famous, and they didn't want him leaving Vienna. And don't think he wanted to leave for any specific purposes. I mean, Vienna's German. That's the part of Austria, very German. He was at home, whether he's in Bonn or whether he's in Vienna. Anyway, they said, we're going to give you some more money, but you have to stay in Vienna. What do you think of that? Okay. That was okay. I mean, he's no fool. I mean, he might be irascible at times, but he had to make money to continue writing and stuff. It's kind of like Edison. Edison merely got money for his inventions, so he had money to go keep on inventing. And Beethoven was that way, and many musicians are that way. you do things to make money so you can continue doing those things that you love, the music. So anyway, the money, this is real interesting. You're going to love this. The money made Beethoven truly the first independent music composer in the world. Before that, nobody had money outside of living under the roof of a royal person that could tell him go scrub floors and, oh, when you're done with there, then you can go write a song. No, he was totally independent at this point because he had so many different benefactors giving him money and he wasn't owed just one person that could wipe him out. So he was, in a sense, he was the world's first rock star. Beethoven was the world's first rock star. And as I said before, before this time, musicians were no more than servants to royalty. They could make money, but they had to work around the houses and stuff, and then they could write music. So it was really, that's why a lot of your parents didn't want their kids being musicians or composers, no matter what. So it's very interesting. 1812, moving along again. Beethoven met the poet Goethe. These were two of the greats at the time. Goethe was a poet, of course, and each admired each other from a distance. And Beethoven actually put several of Goethe's poems to music. When they finally did meet, here's what Beethoven thought of Goethe. Goethe. He was too servile. He was a servant, basically, in the mind. And Goethe thought Beethoven was completely untamed. So, I'm sorry, I have to identify And I have to support Beethoven on this. No artist can be tamed. There is no way to be servile. I hope nobody ever calls me that. They can call me completely untamed anytime. My wife would probably use that term about me. She wouldn't put me down as a servant, even though I'm commanded by God to be a servant, and I try to be to my fellow man. But I have this artist inside me that I can't have anybody controlling anything I do musically. I resent that. Even working with friends on certain things and being constrained to do things for them, sometimes it's tough. Musically, I'm talking, of course. And also Beethoven, very similar to me in this fact. He had to deal with the changing politics of Europe. And he, for instance, he admired the early Napoleon. When Napoleon was setting up the French Republic, but one day Napoleon decided to crown himself emperor, and Beethoven was outraged, and he was writing a symphony dedicating it to Napoleon, and he crossed Napoleon's name off of it so much he tore the paper, and I guess it's something you can see to this day because they talk about it, at least in the books, and I'd like to see it, in fact. And he scraped that off, and he put something else on there and named it something else. And he couldn't accept it. He would give concerts, of course. When the French took over Vienna, he gave concerts to the French officers, because they are in control of Vienna. There's nothing a musician could do. In 1813, moving again another year, the French were defeated in Spain at a certain battle. And so Beethoven wrote The Victory of Wellington. A lot of people think it was from the 1815 Battle of Waterloo, where Wellington beat Napoleon, and that's not the case. This was about a battle in Spain 2 years before that. Wellington beat him that time too. So anyway, the loyalty depends on who was winning at the time. I guess people had to survive, and that's what happened there. In 1815, Beethoven's brother died, and he wanted his brother wanted his wife and Beethoven to have shared guardianship of his 9-year-old son. And Beethoven referred to his sister-in-law as, quote, the Queen of the Night. So I guess she wasn't the best ethics and morals of a person you could find, and he didn't want his nephew under her control. Eventually, they had to go to court and get it settled. Beethoven won the court battle, but in a sense, he lost the greater battle because his nephew and him really had problems personally. Beethoven was going deaf at the time, of course, or he was starting to get advanced deafness, and to live with a deaf person and you're trying to communicate as a young person with this person that's now your guardian, your uncle, and he would go back to his mother and come back to Beethoven and back and forth, and there was just a lot of things. He was also somewhat talented of a piano player, but he would have, I guess he lacked some passion for it and stuff, and he didn't have the talent of a Beethoven, so eventually that went by the wayside. And Beethoven was disappointed in that. In these custody battles that he eventually won, sometimes it wasn't for the benefit of the young man, though. So that's too. This middle period of Beethoven's musical life gave us Symphony No. 5. It was written 1804 through 1808. I'm going to play a little bit of it right now. Thank you. let's get a little, some personal issues and character of Beethoven. I've talked about some of these already, but just a few things. For instance, Beethoven was probably at best an average student in school. From what I read, he was a poor student. He struggled in math and spelling. He was a terrible speller. And he was terrible at writing lyrics. What he could do musically, he could not do lyrically. And he actually quit school at around 10 years of age, but he concentrated on music. So he knew where his expertise was. He knew where his talent was, and he really went towards that idea. So I'm not sure if that's all a bad thing. I think maybe we're not doing that enough today. Beethoven overall was a lonely, miserable man throughout his life. He withdrew from public many times, again, over the embarrassment of his being deaf. He didn't want to tell anybody. Other times, his temper got out of hand, and he even attempted to break a chair over the head of a royal friend of his. And Beethoven was also very shy, they say, to the point of being crippled with shyness. And he never married or had children, and probably a lot of it is over that. I know a lot of people listening right now, the songwriters that are listening, writers of print, when you hear about this shyness, I've had to fight that all my life. I can meet people well in public. I'm a very good salesman when I have a product I like. I never sell my music, though. It embarrasses me to sell my music. But basically, I'm a very shy person, and I've had to fight that throughout my life. And for the most part, I've done all right with that. But I know a lot of people listening right now understand what I'm saying and probably share that. When he would explode with his temper tantrums with his friends, he'd always apologize the next day, maybe in print. And these are the attributes associated with Beethoven. In one article I was reviewing, these are the four things, these four words: impatient, impulsive, unreasonable, intolerant. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. Anyway, that was some of the things. And here comes the word irascible in my notes here, for instance. A lot of people, the modern term bipolar disorder, a lot of people would feel in those days, whatever the term was, that he probably had the bipolar. You know, good and bad, good and bad. I can be that way. My daughter is probably a bipolar condition at times. But I like I tell her, hold on, you know, you'll outgrow it hopefully a lot of ways. And I've outgrown a lot of it to an extent. I know people are here coughing right now and uncontrollably in laughter that are listening to this show now that know me. So anyway, the friends did stick with him throughout his life. And a lot of that, I believe, is because he's famous. People gather around famous people. It just helps putting up with somebody. Beethoven had a disdain for authority and for social rank. He was as good as anybody. You know, just ask him. So anyway, of course, he didn't like playing for royalty and stuff. And he would just quit. He would just stop playing, and if people were talking or walking around when he was playing, he just wouldn't put up with any of that. And in 1824, 3 years before his death, he wrote the Ninth Symphony. And this is, some of them believe, is his greatest one. And the European Union now uses it as their anthem. I don't think Beethoven probably cares for that much, but anyway, Ode to Joy, as you might recognize, it was from a Friedrich Schiller poem in 1785, and he wanted to write something, and he wanted to, ever since he was 22 years old, put music to that poem, and he finally did 3 years before he died, two years maybe before he died. He wanted to display the song for the first time in Berlin. Because here it goes, Beethoven felt that Italian composers were taking over Vienna at the time, and he didn't want anything to do with it, but they convinced him to do it in Vienna, and he got standing ovations. He couldn't hear anything at the time. He was conducting off beat, and they had another conductor off the side that the stage that the musicians actually had to follow because Beethoven couldn't hear his own music, and he had to turn around and actually be accepted from the audience. He could see them clapping. He was absolutely deaf at this time for the most part. And he died finally. It could have been from alcoholism. He had cirrhosis of the liver with an autopsy. It could have been a few other things. 30,000 people attended his funeral in Vienna. I'm sorry. This isn't the population base of today with 7 billion people on Earth. This was a lot smaller population at the time with no radios and no form of communication yet. This man commanded 30,000 people to his funeral. Well, that's my show for the day, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. I love you all. I hope you love the show and you'll come back to see me next week. I don't know what it's going to be about yet, but I guarantee you it's going to be nice. God bless. This is Robert Lloyd and rockin'. What's my name of my show? Rockin' the Music World with Robert Lloyd. So long.